All right. Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. What we have here is a failure to communicate. Stereosemantics will not be on. I will correct the schedule in a minute. In its place, we're going to have this nice, lovely group of people here. And they're going to talk about PBXs. Specifically, Night Owl, you have a PBX that you've brought here and set up. Is that correct?
That is correct. Currently, we have a very small phone system running between various primarily staff positions within the conference floor, all being run by a salvaged Merlin Legend PBX.
Well, that's very impressive. Let's actually just go around the table real quick and have everybody introduce themselves, just so that everybody knows who's here.
What's up? I'm Nick God. You know me.
You're talking to the back
of
the mic.
Tele Monster or Ethan?
I'm Dave Koppelman.
I am just Matt. I'm just Matt.
Sweet.
Okay. Well, now I actually know people's names.
And Beaches. All right, so... tell us a bit about the piece of kit that you have here for people who are not in the know.
So, the Merlin Legend PBX was the third generation of the Merlin series of PBXs. It was basically the very last small office telephone system produced by Bell Labs as it was being slowly broken up and chunks of it sold off and split across different companies, and then later parts of it being recombined or refounded. And so it came about in the sort of early to mid-90s. This is well after the formal divestiture of the Bell system, but for a very long time, Bell Labs and Bell Corps, which was the research arm, had managed to stay together as its own independent organization supporting all of the baby Bells as they split up in the mid to late 80s. And so they still were designing all of the big telephone switches. This is when we were having the conversion to the 5ESS that we were discussing earlier, and some of the later digital switching systems, which actually anyone familiar with Bruce Sterling's The Hacker Crackdown and the story behind all of that with Operation Sundevil and the Legion of Doom and all of these shenanigans that were happening in the late 80s, early 90s with the baby Bells and phone freaks and early hackers. Well, not early hackers, but the hackers of the sort of post-TAP MIT phase of things. Sort of the end of the Stephen Levy era of hackers and the beginning of the hackers as villains sort of mythos or perception in the public. Anyway, this PBX that we have running here is a bit of recovered kit that was slated to go into a dumpster at a co-location facility here in Manhattan. And very fortunately, a friend of mine, G.I. Jax, happened to be working there at the time, and the management had a tacit understanding that as things were slated to be dumpstered, either because a former client had left them behind and was not planning to retrieve them, as, you know, I mean, I think just about anyone that has ever moved has decided, you know, that piece of shit appliance that broke down 3 months ago and you never really got around to getting rid of. And now that you're moving out, why are you going to bother carrying it with you? So I'll just leave it here. Basically, the same sort of thing happens at co-location facilities. Someone has some 20-year-old piece of crap, like 386 box, that they could never get rid of for one stupid reason or another, either inventory control or somehow it still had a $3 book value and they couldn't get approval to ditch it or something else. And so it's just a lot easier for people in that sort of situation to just mark it as lost in transit. And so when that sort of thing happens, this facility had a deal with its staff that, hey, anything that's going into the dumpster because it's going to be thrown out otherwise, you can totally salvage it if you want. Just, you know, get it out of the office within a reasonable amount of time. They called me up, asked, hey, do you want this PBX? I think it still works. And I said, yeah, sure. And the nice thing about it is the Merlin legend specifically is technically recent enough that, in terms of the technology, that you can go on eBay, you can find line cards and the fancy multi-line digital phones and stuff for it for about $50 a piece. So it's relatively affordable. I mean, in terms of building your own telephone system, it's hard to beat, hey, I need to add 16 lines to my phone system. How do I do that for less than a couple hundred dollars? Well, if you have a Merlin Legend, go pick up a refurbished 16-port single-line phone analog line card for, you know, $45. You know, you want a nice 20-line console for the operator position? $50. You know, it's fairly easy to manage. The documentation is still out there. It's not the easiest thing to find all of the little tiny fine details that the phone company used to try to keep hidden from the clients. But you can still get the documentation, get the stuff that you need fairly easily. It's all within living memory amongst people who dealt with phone systems. So there's still people around who can give you pointers, give you assistance. But it's still affordable.
I mean, what do you think, in your opinion, is the difference between doing that and doing something like Asterisk or FreePBX or any of the open source stuff that's been out there for a while and is actually pretty decent?
Well, I mean, all of those are great things. The big thing is, in order to support Asterisk, very easy to support. Really, the trick is retro hardware. If you want to use a 70-year-old telephone on an Asterisk box, that's not an easy thing to support. You end up, because that's not an issue of software. That's not an issue of the management system. That's an issue of how do you convert a digital VoIP signal into the analog pulses that this 80-year-old telephone is going to need, and vice versa. That ultimately comes down to a hardware thing. And when it's hardware is virtually never free unless it's salvage.
Right.
That's really the biggest thing. Now, I mean, yes, could you probably do exactly what I did here this weekend with Asterisk and possibly even get many more features and much more control than we currently offer? Yeah, but it's a question of how much are you going to spend? How much are you going to invest? Not just in the amount of time it takes to set up, but in the amount of money that you're going to spend actually putting together all the parts to get it up and running.
I don't think you have to sit just with one. Like, you could buy an actual Merlin Legend. There are T1 and ISDN PRI cards, so you could run an Asterisk server next to it and kind of get the two to interact.
Yeah.
Yep. So, yeah. I mean, really, I think ideally in the future, I actually had a much more grandiose plan originally. I was going to get some people to help me negotiate a deal with the hotel for us to be able to use some of their old analog telephone lines that are still, there are still cable runs, but they are not actually in use anywhere. As far as I know, I believe there's only just one line that's still active, and that's just to the old hold music recording. Playing the classic Pennsylvania 65,000. Everything else in there, as far as we can tell, is a dead line, so it would not be a huge deal for us to patch a system like this in.
You're talking about the huge telco room in the back hallways that
yes,
gets picked
yes.
every freaking year?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, you know, get actual permission from the hotel so that we don't, you know, get into too much trouble over the whole thing. But the idea would be that we could put together a very low-cost PBX, wire it up to all of those punch-down boards so that we can run telephone lines to all of our staff positions on the mezzanine, on the 18th floor, on the ground floor, anywhere that we have people who need to be in communication, as well as provide public access points. And then with an Asterisk box, we could create a outbound or direct inward dial trunk into the PBX.
You could also cross-connect it to the hotel's PBX and be able to dial into rooms.
That would That would definitely be possible. I don't think they would be quite as willing to let us do that. generally because they still enjoy being able to bill you for telephone calls to and from rooms.
They don't bill for that.
Oh, do they not anymore?
No.
Well, it's been a long time since I've actually had been able to afford staying in a hotel, so...
Yeah, generally calls between rooms are free. It's just outbound calls.
Well, it's the making sure that we don't get the ability to dial out is really where the trick becomes.
Yeah.
It's much more simple for them if we're not actually connected to any of their live systems. But, you know, it's... This is really something that I decided to bring along anyway to lay a foundation for the future because, you know, when it's just me trying to scrape together whatever I can spare out of my paycheck each week, that does not necessarily turn into a building-wide telephone system in short order, much less have the installation support team to build it out.
The human capital will probably be harder than the hardware because I think there's more dumpsters out there with more Merlin Legends and line cards waiting to be salvaged.
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, the other nice thing about this is that part of my hope for this is that because I'm trying to fit out as much of that with classic tip ring line cards is to allow us to display fully functional versions of classic telephones. Especially as, you know, there are those of us, actually I think most of the people in the booth with us right now have at least a touch of gray somewhere. And there are younger generations that are coming along who maybe they've only seen these, the Western Electric 500s that we have out deployed at a couple of locations right now tied into that PBX, that maybe they've only seen those in old movies and television programs from the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s.
It's kind of hacker history, but so it used to be that in the early days of the scene, a big way that the hackers would communicate is by compromised voicemail boxes on 1-800 numbers. They would basically hack the PIN numbers of voicemail boxes and then turn them into code lines where they would just start spitting off as much information as possible about BBSs and other information. And Audix systems are one of the big systems that were used by corporations, and kind of some of them were compromised. So, young and being in that scene, you kind of got used to hearing these Audix systems, and there's a few other ones like Octel. But when I first got a Merlin Legend system due to the Y2K bug, I guess Lucid wouldn't certify the Merlin Legend systems as Y2K compatible, even though there was no issues. There actually wasn't. You just had to manually type in the date.
Yeah,
that's the entire issue. But
every time that thing loses power out there, I have to reset the clock.
People were getting angry and, I guess, dumping the systems to go to competitor systems, so there's an opportunity to buy them. So I managed to score one with the Audix computer because it had that historical tieback to having the real Audix system you would hear on these voice lines, as well as, I don't know, there's something about the MLX phones. They're very similar to the higher-end Definity PBX phones, and they've got these really great rings.
Yeah.
The ringtones are just coolest rings ever. The phones are built really nice.
Yeah.
And I have a suspicion that the MLX phones are actually using ISDN to talk to the main unit.
They are. It's actually two voice channels, both carried over ISDN pairs. The control signal is also provided over a third ISDN pair to provide programming and control information between the base unit and the control unit. And then the fourth pair is providing power.
So have you hooked an ISDN modem up to one of the ports yet?
I have not. I do have the ISDN terminator, but
oh, okay.
I do not have an ISDN line to connect it to currently.
Interesting. Hmm.
I do have everything necessary to do the DMARC for it. I just don't have the time or patience to do it because I was busy preparing all of the talks that I'm presenting this weekend.
The IRC channel's going nuts about Asterisk now. Not the point of this, guys.
Come on.
Timing issues on his analog POTS ports.
Yeah.
Dumping into VM.
I mean, I have an Asterisk box with, I think I have 8 FXS ports and 4 FXOs. And, like, it's cool and all, but there's something about seeing the system here that's just...
It really
is.
It's
so fun.
And, I mean, the other fun thing is, you know, when security or someone else asks me to move their extension or something, and I go, okay, you know, give me 5 minutes, and then I walk over to where I have all my gear stored, and I come back with my lineman's belt, with all of my Bell System tools and pouches and everything, literally still branded Bell System D or whatever, because virtually all of my tools are literally surplus Bell Systems here. And then I'm carrying, you know, a Real Flow box of Cat 3 around, and people are like, what the hell are you doing? I'm like, oh, well, I'm moving this Western Electric 500 10 feet because someone wants to be able to put it on a different desk.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? How the hell do you do that? I was like, oh, it's really simple. Here you go. You want to see?
Here, you do it now. I don't want to. You do it.
Yeah, I've been doing this for 2 days straight, you know?
Unfortunately, I have nothing to add. This is all new to me, so it's really interesting, but I know pretty much literally nothing about PBX, so this is all good stuff.
So, I mean, really, ultimately, the point of a PBX, for those who don't know what it is a PBX is a, literally the name is Private Branch Exchange. It is literally an attempt to condense all of the features and functionality of a telephone company central office into a box you can put in a closet in your office building and run your entire company's telephone system out of. And then you fit it out with various modules that give it the capability to have varying numbers of direct inward dial lines, which are, you know, the capability for someone in the outside world to dial directly into you. And then from there, you have the ability to route their calls around within your company. I mean, very similarly to the way that international dialing is handled, essentially. You know, you dial that that code to get you the international operator, or now the machine that replaced the international operator. You tell it a country code, and it goes, okay, now I'm going to pass everything you're punching in over to the control system for that that country's inbound port, essentially. And they then figure out from their own systems, okay, now that we don't, that virtually no one has truly nationalized telephone companies outside of a, well, actually there's still plenty of places that have those, but just not as many as used to be. Certainly most of Europe has, over the course of the last 30 years or so, privatized almost all of theirs. I mean, BT is now its own private company. Deutsche Telekom is no longer the national telecom regulator. It's now just sort of the incumbent telco there. Believe Malaysia? There was actually something in the summer issue of 2600 this year that that was speaking about issues with, it was either Singapore or Malaysia, I want to say, where they have the national telco is also the incumbent ISP. And this person discovered some sort of flaw with the routers that that company had been distributing. And I mean, just like any other monolithic company, I mean, really, actually, this is the funny thing now. Every couple of years, particularly around the time of Hope, someone is releasing some sort of major flaw about a very large ISP's home router system. I forget, was it 4 or 6 years ago? There were a couple of people giving a talk at Hope. This is actually one of the most technical, like serious technical flaw or vulnerability releases done at Hope, at least in the decade or so that I've been attending, where they were talking about the issues with, I think it was the Aeris home routers, the like first or second generation of those, really in my opinion, horrible all-in-one cable modem / Wi-Fi access point.
I don't know why you wouldn't do that. Just combine everything into one.
Right, so you know, put everything into a single box that the customer doesn't have any access
exactly.
to.
Exactly. So when you get something wrong in the implementation, they can't even fix it themselves.
Right, right. And actually, very sadly, that really is just bringing the whole thing full circle. because the Merlin Legend was actually one of the first times where the PBX was actually customer-owned equipment. It wasn't just customer-premise equipment. It was customer-owned equipment. Even the previous generations of Merlin were leased from the phone company, usually.
Oh, okay.
This was even after the period when it became common for people to own their own home phone. It was still common practice for PBXs to be leased from the telephone company. And, yeah, you had the ability to do limited management. You could reprovision or reassign existing lines within your building, but if you wanted to add a new line, this was in the era when the phone company still actually offered premises wiring maintenance. I don't think I've seen Verizon offer that feature in years. I know that they years ago sold off all the contracts for the handful of people who still have telephones that were originally leased from the Bell system and are still, they're still being charged on their phone bill every month, $30 or whatever.
The inside wiring maintenance contracts.
Yeah. Well, the inside wiring maintenance contract, and then on top of that, the lease on the single line mechanical electric telephone, which was probably built and has not been serviced since about 1965 or so.
Yeah, there were some early key systems, like I think the 182 or something. Does that sound familiar?
Yes, the 182 was one of the...
phone company owned?
Yes, yes. Those were entirely Bell system owned because, again, the 182 system was a Western Electric system, and that was one of the first non-manual switchboard PBXs. The very earliest PBXs was literally they just put one of those old operator plug boards in your lobby, and your receptionist, in addition to managing the front desk, also had the plug board with really everything that the operator sitting in the telephone company central office down the block had at their station in the giant hall full of other operators. They just had that with plugs that only went between your inbound line and the telephones within your office building. And they usually were either actually employed by the telephone company and contracted to you as the business owner. Or you had to send your secretary or receptionist to be trained by these people. And now...
So, with a few minutes left, we have the radio booth hooked into the phone system. Do we want to play around with it a little bit?
Yes, let's do that.
All
right. Let's see if I can get a dial tone here. I do have a dial tone, so if you can pick up. There we go. Hopefully everyone can hear that. And...
hopefully it did the mix minus right.
And I think we can just hear that in the
Hello?
Distance.
Hello.
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 How you doing?
Yes.
You're on the radio.
Oh, fuck, really?
Yeah.
Yes, you are.
Good.
Do you have anything more to say?
I was going to say, can you get me a beer?
Give me a few minutes.
You managed to get it to work and put the phone system on the radio.
We did, yeah.
Yes.
Would you like to interview anyone in security? I've got Kush here.
Absolutely. You can hang up.
I've got W, various other people.
Cool.
Hello?
Yo, we still got you.
How's it going?
Uh-oh.
Okay, that didn't quite work. There we go.
The hybrid might not be right. Oh.
There we go. Let's see who's at the front door.
Front desk in hospitality.
Excellent. How's it going down there?
We're pretty good down here, I think. We're
good, good.
Probably need somebody to come down now.
Okay, well, let me see if I can conference you in with the security desk.
Oh, neat.
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. Is this security? Hello?
Hello?
Yes. Sorry. Is this security or is this the front desk?
I'm still front desk.
Okay.
Even though I'm security technically. I can get somebody to come down from security. I can always
No, no. It's all right. You know what? I'm going to call you right back. There we go.
Tech support.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. I think the front desk needs someone.
Please hold.
Hello?
Hi, Loom. Someone at the front desk needs relief.
But we don't have any people available at the moment.
What if I got you a beer in 5 minutes?
Yes, I know I'm back on the radio. I recognize your voice. So basically, this is what it comes to. You're going to prank call me.
No, somebody at the front desk really needs somebody.
No, literally, someone at the front desk actually does need you.
I sent two guys down to the front desk 5 minutes ago. So.
Well, I'll let them know that.
All right, thank you.
I think I'm hearing calling it on the radio, right?
Yep. Yeah.
Front desk.
Hi, front desk. Someone was sent down by the security desk about 5 minutes ago, so they should be there shortly.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye now.
So I'm having flashbacks to the Merlin legend. I'm pretty sure that once I owned one, I found this thing that if there's an extension if you dial, you will get a modem in the unit whereby you could use the configuration software.
Yes.
Which means if you were in a hotel that had said system, from any extension in any room, you could hook your laptop in and then theoretically connect to the actual unit and program it.
There is one little wrinkle with that,
right?
Is that it requires an authorization code.
Which is probably going to be Mainz or one of the other defaults.
Well, yes. The trick is that none of the documentation ever actually listed it.
Oh.
The only way to know that code is to find someone who actually got the code from the telephone company back in the day. And even they are still very cagey about giving those out because there are, amazingly enough, still some places that are still running these systems.
Huh. I still have a red card for the unit that's a firmware update card. So it's a PCMC
card. I've
got
about three of those.
So I'm assuming that if you could extract the information off that, it might be possible to pull
it out
of it.
It may be possible. It may be possible. The real trick these days is finding something that still reads compact flash.
It's not just that. It's an SRAM card, I think, or something weird.
Yes,
so it's
it's SRAM using the
PCMCIA.
PCMCIA card form factor and pinout.
So there might actually still be exploits that have yet to be...
I imagine there are, because really the big problem these days is now finding the ability to actually read that physical format.
Well, there's plenty of vintage computer enthusiasts out there that should have laptops with the card readers and whatnot. But if I remember right, it was kind of trying to copy the card was very difficult, so I think there's something weird about it.
Oh, absolutely. 386s with $3 value, you see. You gotta keep them around because you never know what you might have on media you never thought you'd need.
Absolutely. This is why I still have the ThinkPad.
386s are actually worth a chunk of money now.
The world's first tablet computer, the ThinkPad. 20 meg of flash memory in two SRAM cards.
Very nice.
Running TouchPoint OS. With a full-size parallel port, narrow SCSI, and the very first version of the PS2 connector, only for keyboards. The entire thing ran on a 386, had no openings in the enclosure.
It was because it was a solid block of magnesium where the entire body acts as a heat sink for the CPU.
Did it last like 10 minutes on 10D batteries? Or?
No, it lasted about 2 hours on some lead acid.
Weighed 70 pounds.
About 12.
Yeah.
So, you know, as long as you hold it correctly, you know, it's just a really heavy clipboard. Except you can still beat someone to death with it.
Beefy biceps and MS-DOS.
Yeah. Pretty
this
much.
This is the future.
This truly future. Is the future. More importantly, it beat Apple to the market with the Newton by about 6 months, debuting in April of 1992.
Who got the last laugh, IBM?
I think Lenovo did when they purchased essentially all of IBM's hardware divisions and then ruined every single brand that IBM had spent decades establishing.
Yep. Greatly improved their firmware.
No, they made the firmware worse.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
They just backdoored it.
Right. So I think we're just about out of time. Any final thoughts for anybody?
This has been a greatly informational session for me, so thank you, guys.
Cool.
Awesome. Hardware PBXs are fun?
Yeah. Play with them.
People with beards generally know things.
Not always.
But all right, sometimes.
All right.
Moving on to the next thing.
Until
we'll be back
next
in a minute.
Time.